Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
It's time for us to head into the climate crazy. And I can think of nothing crazier than the power crisis we supposedly have sleepwalked into. But hey, I am well within my rights, as is Dawn, to right now say, we jolly well told you so.
Yeah, there's nothing unique in it. And we've had former guests on the show like Larry Blair, Brian Leyland. All these guys have been warning. And of course, you know, I've got a view, Jaspreet, that the genesis of all this may have been the Net Zero Act and the climate change push. But on top of all that, it's just been really hard to make to do big projects since the RMA was enacted in 1991. So, and you can't blame anyone for not wanting to put new expensive generation systems in big projects, because they actually need a rate of return over and above the cost of capital. And, you know, while there's a surplus of electrons around, that's not going to happen. You know, why would you want to build something when there's a surplus? You generally, the best time is when there's a deficit. And of course, that's what's happening. And if you add into all of this, I talked about it earlier, the GIDI fund around the decarbonisation of boilers, you know, that were formerly coal or wood even, or lignite, they've been sort of terminated where possible and electrified. Massive new capacity required, taking up any slop in the capacity there may have been, any surplus. Add in data centers, AI, and there ain't going to be enough electrons anytime soon. And of course, we've got the lowest lake levels we've had in some time. I mean, there's a whole lot of things that you have to join up. But as Larry Blair warned us about, the gas supply in New Zealand was tenuous. I listened to a podcast the other night that said that we'd spent, people that do exploration have spent $2 billion on 50 different sites around the Taranaki zone, I think it is, in the last few years, and come up dry. I mean, it's not like exploration actually stopped, as probably most New Zealanders think. But yeah, there's a lot of things in play here. And I, yeah.
And most of those things were as obvious as the nose on our faces. Absolutely. We refused to look at them. You spoke about Larry Blair. You mentioned him, Don. And I would encourage listeners this week, especially, to go to Larry Blair's Substack, which is called New Zealand Energy. Just newzealandenergy.substack.com. He's got a couple of great posts out this last week just gone. One of them is the snowball effect and the other is eating our own corn. And what he's laid bare is what the fact that he's been pointing this out from well over a year ago now that this is happening. But let's just recount what's happened in the last week. The OG Fiber Solutions group has said they're closing their Penrose plant that uses recycled paper to make cardboard cartons for export products. 75 jobs on the line. Open Country, they are not planning to close, but they have woes, which says that's making their current situation sort of really dicey here, especially where their future plans are concerned. And what has happened is their alternative powered cheese, Southland Cheese Factory, has had to incorporate standby coal-fired boilers because of the risk of low electricity. And the chair, Laurie Margrain, has said it's unsurprising. As Dawn just said, productivity, says Laurie, gets improved only through capital investment, and we can't attract that if we are in an energy crisis, which is what's happening. We have Winstone Pulp International shutting down its Karori pulp mill and the Tangawai sawmill for now for 2 weeks, but who knows where that goes. The wholesale prices, Don, they've gone up nearly 600%, haven't they, in the last year or so?
I'd say even more. I think that I've said I saw $800 dollars per kilowatt hour. I'm not quite sure what it was, but anyway, that ebbs and flows. But in a crisis, obviously it's going to be high. And anyone that hasn't contracted their supply, it's going to have to pay the spot price, because if they've got a contract to supply and they've decided that they could play the spot for, say, let's say 20%, I'm guessing here, they're going to have to pay that. And of course, it's going to put the squeeze on everyone. You know, Jaspreet, I've got to say something that really annoyed me. I'm a loyal Southlander, as you know.
So?
And the TY Point aluminium smelter is just over the hill, the flats from me, over the swamp, basically. And this arrogance in a lot of rural media, let alone national media in recent years, about just close it and get the juice north and it'll all be solved. And thankfully, TY Point Aluminium Smelter has now a contract for the next 20 years. And all of a sudden, the people further north, the consumers further north have realized, oh, we can't get that power anymore. But at the meantime, TY Point Aluminium Smelter now has to do its first of four tranches. It's got, I gather in the agreement it's got over 20 years, there's four times it can be asked to turn down production. Well, it's already, within the first few months of this contract, being asked to turn down its production tap 20%.
That is significant. If it's only allowed to do that four times in a period of 20 years, doing that so early in this, it doesn't bode well. And yet, Don, we have these power plants that are, these data centers that are supposedly coming up around Mako River, not far from you and me. What's going to happen when they come along?
Well, I've got some intel. I'm not going to tell you who told me that if they were to set up tomorrow, there is absolutely zero electrons available for them, because the electrification of these boilers that's happening at the meat and milk and hospitals, the plants and processes and hospitals and schools, has taken all the spare electrons that were around in the southern zone. So maybe that the north has to support the south. Wouldn't that be a turnaround?
It is.
Anyway, look, this is a bugger's muddle created by our own government's policies. You could talk about whether the market model we've got is right. And I know Brian Leyland's got a view about that, and so have plenty of others. I can't debate that. It does seem that the only way to get new electricity, aside from wind and solar, into the system now, if it has to be something other than that, could be with the government helping build something. So the taxpayers would fund it. Because no one's going to build something if there's not a big rate of return on it. And of course, we did have years ago, it was called, I think it was the Whirinaki power output, was diesel pad generators. I think it was stationed at Whirinaki along with, I think, geothermal there. And so I think that's been discontinued, but I imagine that's what we're going to have to do again. We're going to have diesel pad turbines or something like that driving new electricity for the moment to get us through this hump.
They are, how do I say deaf in a word that really hits people's brains? We had this, at this point, this government's emission reduction plan that they released with such fanfare was talking of 10,000 EV chargers or something. This new government, the coalition, they have participated in the second of the 2+2 forums that we have, and they have so many of these outfits that it's hard to keep track. But this 2+2 dialogue, it began last year, and this time two ministers from Australia have met two ministers from New Zealand, and again sort of reiterated their commitment to climate and climate finance. And among that, one of the first things they mentioned is that they were going to conduct a review into regulatory barriers to net zero transformation, with an initial focus on regulatory interactions with standards for batteries and electric vehicle charging. And they're going to have this Professor Flavio Menezes, who will provide independent strategic advice. Now, independent being the key word, this guy has already provided economic advice to every organization in Australia, not to mention the governments of Victoria, Queensland. His specialization, he says, is in telecom, defense, fisheries, water, gambling, natural resources, dairy, smart cities, banking, health and transport. I mean, there's nothing this guy doesn't cover. We are having these sort of people still push the same agendas on us. We have the new coalition taking part in this whole push for net zero, and no one is seeing that the chickens are coming home to roost.
Well,
they are here. We are in an energy crisis.
I'll be a little facetious. NZ net zero NZ, New Zealand. NZ, New Zealand, net zero will be zero. We will be zero. Economic, I know that was a bit ridiculous, but we're heading on the road to zero. The economic recovery we need to have is being put at risk by this nonsense. I mean, we had 6 years from hell, actually. I'll be really blunt. The 2017 to 2023 period is the worst. It was worse for me than the 85 reforms of the Douglas years. Wow. And the damage to this economy is going to take years to pay back. And yet we've got these people that think they can alter the world of commerce. And it's just nonsensical. And they want to do it by non-market means. They want to do it by legislative privileges we talk about all the time. And you know, we may have a chance later in the show to play a clip from, as I said, the Pact for the Future conference coming up in September from the United Nations. These people are megalomaniacs. And I don't know why we allowed them to actually peddle their wares, but they've been given a stage. And I know I'm sounding aggravated here, Jaspreet, but we've given them stage. You think? Yeah. We've given them a stage, and they have, like all the world's a stage, as the saying goes, they have used it and milked it and have got such great emphasis through all their institutions, and no one's stopping them.
No.
Not our government.
Like these charges and all of this is going to save us, still push for net zero. As recently as last week, these ministers meeting each other for dialogues on the 2+2 forum, is no one seeing what's happening? There are people's jobs in regional New Zealand at stake, in Auckland at stake, everywhere. Blackouts are around the corner. What are we speaking about?
Do you think there's one politician in New Zealand willing to stand up and say the sort of stuff we're talking about and the inferences we're giving here? That'd be called crazy. That'd be branded crazy. And yet there's hundreds of thousands of useful disciples like them around the world playing right into this tune from the United Nations, the unelected United Nations. When you listen to Guterres, or you listen to the WEF guy, Schwab, you listen to the the United Nations guy, Johan Rockström from Sweden, or you listen to Harari, these guys are megalomaniacs and no one's stopping them. So it has to be about who's feeding them, that the money tree going down and getting people like our former prime minister in their clutches to be the useful mouthpiece.
But even the current lockdown, they are still going down. And this is without adding the fact that I barely saw any coverage here of the monster EV fire in Korea. That was caused by one of the Mercedes spontaneously combusting in, just annihilating, bursting into flames in an underground car park. It saw 23 hospitalized, 700 evacuated, over 150 other cars destroyed. And EVs are now being banned from enclosed car parks in South Korea. There's issues of being discussed right now that what sort of parking and where would these vehicles be allowed to park? You know, we keep talking about safety. We are talking of monkeypox and emergency use authorization. Someone see the writing on the wall here.
Well, who's going to make the call and say we need to put the stoppers on this in New Zealand? Because we're just a bit player in the scheme of things in the United Nations, the unelected body. We're just a bit player. And yet we seem to have been the petri dish, the test tube, for let's roll this out. Now, so when we talk about being kind, being just, having the Build Back Better stuff, it was all on the podium way back, was it 2017 or 2020? The former Prime Minister used those very words that are now used entirely through the lexicon of the United Nations sycophants, like Macron, like Trudeau, like Boris Johnson even, like Biden. They're all there. And you know, they're not just wolf in sheep's clothing anymore. They're overt.
They've shown their colours. Shown their colours. If we choose to not see them, we are choosing to remain, as I've called it often, we're choosing to remain kind and blind.
Kind and blind.
And the productivity is gone for a toss. Efficiency, everything takes so much longer right now to get past. And I saw this article a couple of days ago about on stuff, actually. Meridian Silent or Night Ahu Waitaki River Consent Payment.
You know how to wind me up, don't you? You know how to wind me up.
What does this even mean? Now, I'm wound up about this myself. The article goes on to say, Meridian is not revealing the amount it has paid Ngāi Tahu as it seeks to renew resource consents for the Waitaki Hydro Scheme. Last year, Meridian signed agreements with Narunanga Waitaki, the dock, and Central South Island Fish and Game, which included financial settlements. And right now, Meridian needs to renew 18 resource consents for six stations and 60 kilometers of canals for 35 years. And the chief executive, Neil Barclay of Meridian Power Companies, just said that it's entirely consistent with the way resource consent applicants approach large infrastructure projects that have long-term implications for society. Seriously? So will paying money sort out those long-term implications, and how much money exactly?
Oh, it fixes everything for Ngāi Tahu. Money just works really well. It's going to go to help them expand their business. Fabulous. I thought we had equal access, equal opportunity in this country. I thought that the scheme had well and truly looked out for its perhaps effect on the environment over its time, and well and truly paid for itself, because all New Zealanders benefit from the use of that resource. But it comes down through that story. And so some wise people have done the numbers. They said the 180 million has been published as the amount paid to Ngāi Tahu and the other parties by Meridian and Genesis. And if you then, some people did the deductions that it was going to be over 2 million a year to dock for 35 years or 73 million. And then someone else said that $80,000 a year for fish and game, 2.8 million over 35 years. So that leaves 104 million for as the residue. And that sounds like they're effectively saying that's what Ngāi Tahu's getting over 35 years. Who's paying for that? Well, you and I as consumers. I don't quite understand why something that has been there for, well, I don't understand, something that's been there for so long now, doing really good for the New Zealand economy, actually helping pay taxes and dividends to the government, that's filtering it through to all society. If they're worried about disadvantaged people will be getting a chunk of the action from this, and yet it's not good enough. And I tell you what, Jaspreet, I started to see this activity going on in my province probably in the early 90s, when there was a process put through councils called iwi liaison funding. And I have a feeling it was around 21,000 for the Invercargill City at the time, and around 70,000 annually from the four councils here. And what was it for? Well, it was so that you could get through consents hearings processes a lot better and smoother with that help or that money. It could mean that you could fund a few people, they could talk to you nicely. And I don't disrespect those elders, the Maori elders of the time. But you could talk to them, and then they would just give you a bit of a tick. Or maybe if you do a bit of something more over here, we'll still give you a tick, but you have to do this. To me, this is extortion. And you and I are paying for this extortion. Other people will say, no, it's being nice, it's being kind, it's being just. That's what the former Prime Minister would have called it. I call it totally unjust and an injustice on the rest of us. So when are we going to decide to be New Zealand for all New Zealanders instead of this divisive stuff? I know this will probably go ballistic in our feedback, but I've had enough. I know I'm the generation moving through and out the other side. But this is a legacy. This is a legacy of the last 50 years really hitting the headlines for me. And I look at that. We talked about the Lake Ellesmere area a few weeks ago and Elizabeth Munt's on. To me, it's a sort of extortion that's going on there as well.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, there's been some serious taxpayer cash gone into that rocket launching site on the spit in front of Lake Ellesmere on the seaside of it. And who's in control of that? Well, it's Ngāi Tahu, as I understand it.
Well, the entire South Island is, in a way. But, yeah.
And I, they've been given the opportunity. I met some of these elders, and I know, well, they may not remember me. I definitely remember them because they've been in FA in front of us for 30 or 40 years. Can't blame them. They were given the opportunity.
Yep.
And they've taken it massively. How you wind this back? When is it complete? It doesn't look like it's ever complete.
When will it be equitable? When will everything be equitable? Yeah. That equity never comes. Because if you look after, look, because that's a word I think, listeners, one should ponder upon. I've often used the same example. When we want equality of opportunities. When we want equity, we want equality of outcomes. One can be done. The others cannot be ensured. We are nearly 8 billion living, breathing people on this planet. How do you ensure equity of outcomes for all of us? Heck, I can't even ensure that within my family, my two children being raised by the same set of parents, being given the same opportunities are completely different, which is what happened to my brother and me. Same parent, same set of DNA, same opportunities, completely different paths in life. Mm. You cannot have equity. We are individuals. We are not a group to be herded along the same path.
Well, and you know, well, for us, you know, supposed white New Zealanders, because, you know, I hate that branding, but we thought when I think it was former Minister Sir Douglas Graham signed the fiscal envelope about 1990, I think, which was going to be, it was a $1 billion fiscal envelope for reparations for the past misgivings of previous governments for over 150 years. Well, we thought $1 billion did it. Well, I gather that fiscal envelope is now $3 billion and climbing, and each settlement has a ratchet clause or a clause in it that says no one will be worse off. So if someone negotiates a better deal, everybody else gets the rising tide. I mean, $3 billion, when is it going to stop? I mean, we look at the scuttlebutt coming out of the Riparera Trust again recently by Andrea Vance from the She and Stuff, I think. Mm. I mean, Maori do need regular people like me need to wake up and say, where is this all going? Who's it benefiting?
Where will it end?
That too. There's certainly some
elite. When will we say now is done? We are done here. We are sorted. We are all equal. Yeah. Everything is done.
Well,
it's just like the climate nirvana, isn't it, Tom?
Yeah, it is. It's never going to end. All... While you let elites control this, it's never going to end.
Yeah.
And to me, we've had some really dumb governance in this country, starting probably in the mid-70s, early 80s.
And aided by some very tolerant people, Don. Some very tolerant people who just laid back and thought the ones they have elected are going to do the right. But I think at this point, perhaps there's another bit of this climate nonsense we need to deal with, which took the cake for me in the climate crazy stake, which is this article that came in the rural news. It also came in urban news at various places, which is a study that has been done by Auckland University. And the blurb says, a recent study shows that the shift to renewable energy sources, such as solar and wind power, has led to, drum roll please, increased food prices and decrease in agricultural input. You don't say. I would never have seen that. I would never have they'd not done this study, Don. Auckland University, Emerson C.D. Silver at the Energy Center and Department of Economics at Auckland University. I would never have guessed that renewables would have upped my food budget.
Well, this is over 32 countries, so I imagine New Zealand may have seen only the bottom end of this, but certainly it's here. And people want to have unreliable, intermittent energy at high cost. That's
and,
what's going to happen.
And lower the food production. I mean, what could be better? Yeah. Who needs cheap food and plentiful food?
Well, of course, we do produce more food than we need as part of the argument. So these people that are talking about this circular economy, that they say we should only have what we need. We shouldn't be producing more than we need. And of course, there's a whole lot of other things come into that discussion as well. And thankfully, more and more people are coming out against the sort of food mix we'll have in the future, saying we actually do want natural, we do want homegrown sort of stuff. We don't want lab-based products. So look, but again, Jasper, I know you sent that to me in good faith, and I look at it and I think, bloody hell, sorry, I don't need to where just another person on the pay of somebody else writing another paper that actually, to me, is irrelevant.
Because you are echoing what most of the people, because I popped this on last week's interviewee, Dr. Muriel Newman's page, the New Zealand Center for Political Research. And I have never got so much feedback as one after the other. There's one person who says a lot about university professors. My 95-year mother could have told you that. Someone else, oh, what's that phase? Conspiracy theorists. Someone else, we needed a study to do this. You needed consultants. We pay people. What a frigging surprise. And is this the opportunity Shaw was talking about? And this one, someone should, the equivalent here should have been, should have gone to Specsavers or should have listened to Greenwashed. Daniel Tyler wrote that. Yeah, Daniel, thank you for that one.
Look, I can't keep up with you, Jaspreet. I didn't know you had enough time to even be posting stuff on Muriel's page. fantastic. Look, where's the reality check going to happen here? We've got so many people thinking they're really important. They've been encouraged to do this stuff. And you do like to think that scientific research isn't going to end. But I'm sick of paying for this sort of output, actually.
Output. Yeah, totally. So there's no much, not much else that has taken the cake. You know, usually Don and I go through quite a few headlines from across the world. The Guardian is one of my favorite sources about what's going on. But this time it was domestic New Zealand headlines, the power crisis, and the fact that each time you say you want renewable energy, you're actually saying you love expensive food and less of it. So if that's you, yay for you. And at this point, I think we should move on to the two other guests we'll be having on this morning. We'll be having a panel discussion with two engineers in the house. That'll be Duncan Campbell. He's a traffic engineer. And John Skerry, he's been a guest in the past, and he's a structural engineer who has strenuously voiced his arguments against all sorts of, diluting of standards that's been happening in the engineering profession. And today, hopefully, we're going to talk more about the DEI agendas, the diversity, equity, inclusion agendas going on in the engineering profession and the impact of that on productivity, efficiency, and the like. Because if that's one thing Don and I are for, we don't mind money being spent, but it has to deliver tangible results. So if you have joined us this morning and you've listened to Don and me ranting through the climate crazy, good on you. If you need to take a break now, I wouldn't blame you. Thank you so much for being on here. We'll be back in a moment with our two guests, 2057, or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio.
Are you loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it, and right now they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.